Appreciate the opportunity to speak before you today, and along the lines of what the objective of this session was, I'm going to talk about some management relations and things such as tillage, variety. I won't be talking too specifically about soil. It's more embedded in these other factors, the tillage and variety. I do want to recognize my co-author, Owen Guathamy, who supplied some of this data and some projects that we've worked on over the years and trying to elucidate some of the regional responses of cotton to potassium in terms of quality, yield, et cetera. So as my objectives for this presentation today, as I say here, I'll examine the tillage. Like I said, not mention too much about soil, but look at variety influences a little bit on cotton response to both soil K as well as potassium fertilization. Along the lines, we'll explore some of the reasoning for observed responses. If you've been here for all the talks, you've gotten a good basic course in physiology, and I'll allude to some of this physiology along the way and how it's actually influencing these field responses that I'm going to show you and hopefully justify some of these K management strategies. You've heard today discussion about how potassium affects photosynthesis. I think that's pretty much a given. I think we understand that. It affects sugar transport. It affects water relations, dry matter partitioning. When the plant decides to go from vegetative to reproductive, it starts partitioning those source-sink relationships come into play. It starts partitioning a lot of those carbohydrates to the developing bowl, and potassium's going right there with it. All right, lint yield as well as and then quality effects. And just to show you some good pictures here, you know, we've talked about late season potash deficiency. It's on upper and newer leaves, but in dry years, I've seen almost whole plants deficient, and that's what's kind of showing here. You see just the yellow chlorotic nature, and up and down, even deep in the canopy, you see that potassium deficiency. Just incredible when we've had these real dry years in Mississippi, which we've had for two summers now. All right. This is some older work, and I think I saw Adele in the room, previous graduate student of mine from years ago. When I first came to Mississippi State, we started looking at some things down around Yazoo City on high-yielding Morganfield soil. It actually has had the record sometimes for highest cotton, non-irrigated cotton yields in Mississippi. Real good ice cream soil, CEC of about 11. But one thing I want to point out here is just establishing that, yes, cotton, even though we're already at a high yield, even at the lower soil test, about 160 pounds per acre, multiply these times two, we're still pushing yield another couple hundred pounds up to about that 320 or so soil level on this high yielding situation. Notice that, you know, this is an area two and a half bale cotton at that time back in the 90s was not uncommon. And this is non-irrigated, so it's good soil. But notice the varieties too, Stoneville 506 and Delta Pond 50. But really, I just want to establish, just showing you some the relationships of lint yield with soil test K. Some of the other things we were trying to establish, which has been alluded to in some of the talks today, is, well, where do you need to be on tissue testing? And I don't think it was emphasized enough, you know, that it's a moving target throughout the season. You've got to know when you take your samples, you know, is it at squaring, is it at early flowering, first week, second week, third week, et cetera. Extremely important to delineate leaf blade potassium levels or even petiole levels at the physiological stage of growth. Incredibly important because it's a moving target of changes. These were taken at what we call early bloom, probably about the second week of seeing flowers out there in a field. But notice this, and this kind of goes along with the yield, that we were actually pushing somewhere around 2, almost to 2.5% where we were finding optimal. Now, keep in mind, before this study, we did this, all the data in Mississippi had said and established that 1% potassium, and I think you heard that in a talk earlier today, but of course that was in sand culture, et cetera. But I still see that on some of my plots at probably about 1.3%. So we've got this confusion on, you know, where we're at, and it's probably soil related, but on this soil in a high yielding situation, that 2 to 2.5% was more optimal. Then I don't know if we could have even got 1%. We didn't even see 1% in this study. All right. Now, one thing I want to emphasize, you've heard about the physiology and how potassium affects it. One thing we saw at this site, that was really amazing with potassium was this right here. This is, you know, you heard a cutout. Well, I call it leaf senescence. All right. This is the amount of dry matter lost in kilograms per hectare. Think of that as pounds per acre. Relative to the fertilization regime that we had. Notice that as we increased fertilizer rate, those plants were staying green and holding their leaves. That's why I equate this to photosynthetic capacity. I didn't go out there with a probe or anything like that, but I'll bet you I had photosynthesis longer because my leaves were on the plant and they weren't on the ground. That's a soil fertility perspective. I heard the plant physiologist commenting on soil early, so you know, I had to, with my limited training in plant physiology also. But this was just critical because these plants, these here, even though we're getting over 2-bale cotton, these plants were self-defoliating these zeros. And if we fertilized them, they held their leaves. This was to the point of being excessive. The leaves wouldn't come off the plant. It looked like a nitrogen response. All right? So let's look a little bit at tillage effect. Here's a study here. As been alluded to later, you know, some people have made their career on one thing. I wish I could. I do too many different things, but potassium's been one of them. But I did this for 92 through 95, and I didn't have a heartbeat, okay? There wasn't even a pulse with conventional tillage. So I threw my hands up. I said, I'm going to no-till. I like no-till. I just did this for the heck of it. Look what happened. 96 through 99, when I switched. Now, this is a heavy clay soil. And so there were physical property changes in this soil that were to its benefit. But it also became responsive to potassium all of a sudden, where it wasn't before. And it wasn't necessarily a variety change or anything like that. It was basically, and of course I'm not comparing conventional and no-till here very directly because I can't because they weren't within the same years. But, you know, this makes a suggestion there that no-till was having a difference, possibly needed higher K rates, but also that the cotton became responsive. We'll explore that a little bit more. Then over on another site at Mississippi State on a Marietta loam soil, a little bit lighter texture, still a high CEC soil. Here's my conventional tillage. Sure, I was getting a little bit of a response there, and this is for the years 98 through 2000, but it's a little flatter, a little more flat line. And then I switched to no-till, and similar to the other site, we started to get a little bit more response. The yields are lower on this site for no-till compared to that, though, and there's a lot there based with rainfall and stuff. So it's not a direct comparison. I understand that. I can't do statistics here. This is, you know, different years and such. But the way I like to look at it is, what if you have a grower out there that's been in conventional till 98, 2000, and he switches to no-till, and they see stuff like this, okay? And you don't have comparisons for them, but you know, this could help to, even looking at things like this can help to maybe explain things or point us to maybe where we need to be doing some research on this. All right. Now, Jackson, Tennessee, some data supplied by Owen Gwathmey, and I'm sure Don Howard probably had his hands in this early on, and the variety here was Paymaster 1218. They were actually making a direct comparison within the same years of no-till and conventional till. They had a little slightly, you know, greater yield consistent with the no-till, not a great difference, but a fairly consistent difference. The point is, what you're going to keep seeing over again in these slides is what? Cotton is responsive to what nutrient? To potassium, okay? We're getting a response. Look at this. They have dramatic, very poor production here, non-productive soils almost with their lower K or no K. And I don't know what the soil test is at that level. You can ask Gwathmey that question, Dr. Gwathmey. But look at the yield response. About, you know, 1,000 pounds or so. You know, well, let's look at about 800 pounds or so, 600 to 800 pounds. All right. So how do we explain some of this? This is that same study from with the silty clay loam from Mississippi State that I published. But one thing I noticed, here's my rainfall record. And what is this? We were down to that lowest year of about 12 inches, and that's what we had about this summer and last summer to grow cotton. And it was pretty, it's pretty low. I love 20 inches. If I can get a rain during the growing season, about 20 inches. But notice this. Here's my rainfall decline. Here's my zero check plot yield record for those years. Okay? As the drought increased or less rainfall, my yields went down. My 70-pound rate, the yields went down to, But look at where I've maintained higher soil test levels by higher rates of fertilizing. What was I doing here? What's going on here? Am I not averting stress, drought stress more specifically? You heard it earlier, the effects on stomatal open enclosure and CO2 acquisition and all that stuff. This is, someone who's been fertilizing, they're actually, this helps get them through those dry years on dry land cotton. This is non-irrigated cotton. All right, so that's kind of how I see is what's going on. Leo pointed out this earlier, and this is a no-till. Keep in mind that you do get this stratification in no-till, and you may get more shallower rooting, but then again, the potassium's maybe where the cotton roots need it if they're shallower and closer to the surface there. So you can expect this stratification, especially in high CEC soils. In a sandy soil, coastal plain soil, CEC 3, 4, 5, this isn't going to happen as great. That potassium is going to move deeper. All right, well, let's explore variety effects a little bit, because you hear of these things, late season potash deficiency was related to the varieties, et cetera. Remember, they're making their yield in a shorter amount of time. For 2 years now, 06, 2006, and 2007, I've had a direct comparison with 445 and 555. 445, of course, is classified as an early to mid, and 555, a mid to a full. Okay. Notice the consistency, the 2 years, there's a little blip here with the 555 in 07. But overall, you see that it's not necessarily an interactive response. In other words, the lines aren't crossing each other. They're almost parallel, and there seems to be some divergence in the data here. But probably for the most part, until I get more years of this data, I would say that, hey, they both respond to potassium, okay? And the greater yield is being made by the more full season, the longer season cultivar. All right. Now, in contrast to that, Guafmi did, and his student Clement Bailey did some work comparing 12-18, a more early season relative to 5-15, that mid to fall. And they found from a low K rate to a high K rate, they did find that increasing potassium in both cases with both varieties delayed maturity. Well, that's what I told you earlier about the decreased senescence. If you put more potassium on, keeps those leaves on the plant, and it delays that maturity somewhat. And what did it mean for the early maturing variety? It meant greater yield. It did not mean so much for the 555 for the full season. But keep in mind there, these are lint yields, right? They're pretty good lint yields, okay? He's pushing over three bale cotton here. So compared to my data for Mississippi State, this is, was a very high yielding situation these 2 years of data that he has. But it's still kind of saying the same thing. All right. Now let's look at lint quality response. And I've got a couple locations here, and I've got Tennessee conventional tillage, Tennessee no-till Ames plantation down the road, I guess, from here, MSU, Marietta loam, at Mississippi State, my Leaper silty clay loam, and then no-till Jackson. The soil at Ames, I think, is a Grenada silt loam, and at Jackson, it's a Loring silt loam? Okay. But notice what's going on here. Here's your premium. You're going to get a premium for a micronair of 3.7 to 4.2, okay? So 3.7, draw a line across here, 4.2. That kind of narrows down. Only right in here would I have received a premium for this cotton, all right? A discount's going to happen if I'm below 3.5, only in the case of severe deficiency, and a discount's only going to happen up here at 4.9 or greater. And so there's probably one point that would have had a discount. The rest, the majority of them, are going to be where you don't get any benefit or you don't get any decrease. But notice what's happening there and why we're seeing higher micronairs are putting higher potassium rates out, and they're doing what? They're go back to the yield size. They're pushing yield. They're hedging that yield and getting more money for that and not necessarily focusing on maybe a getting a premium amount of money for what they're selling. But I do want to point out, and I did look at strength, and I did look at uniformity and such in these studies. We had the data. This was the most glaring where there was actually an effect of potassium was on Micronair. I think it's pretty well established that it's affecting the maturity, it's affecting the fineness or the thickness of that fiber, as all the physiological presentations earlier would suggest there. All right, so in summary, to avoid mid, and I'm not even calling it late season because I've seen it past 2 years very early in Mississippi, avoid mid to late season K deficient, consider fertilizer K adjustment for no-till. You might want to go to a little bit higher rates, or if you're a researcher, you might want to look at it a little bit and make some no-till conventional till comparisons. All right. Utilize up-to-date soil and plant tissue information where available for your K management. I know it was good to see the plant physiologist earlier talk about you should soil test. And I'll support the plant physiologist and I'll say you should tissue test. Okay? They go hand in hand. They're important. All right? We don't want to shoot in the dark, try to hit a target with in the dark. All right? Address spatial issues. Very important, because generally where I've seen potassium deficiency, it's localized, it's spatially. Farmers could boost their income and yields and such by addressing these spatial issues. Know your variety characteristics. I think the companies do a pretty good job of reporting Micronair quality values relative to their variety. So if you know you're growing a variety with high mic, watch that potassium a little bit. It does affect Micronair. Does it put you over the top all the time? Probably not, but it pushes you closer to it. So that's it.
Thanks, Jack.
I want to congratulate Jack. He was actually the only speaker that stayed within his time limit.
And I really want to go.
And because of him, we actually have, instead of 20 minutes, we actually have and I'll give him credit for the 4 minutes we have left for before the break for discussion. When I set the timer for him, it would have been, had he taken his full time, it would have been 3:30 straight down when he got done. So if we, you have something?
Question, yeah.
Yeah.